Welcome to Sound Thinking. I'm Marty Duda. Today we have four new releases that are coming out on March 15th. We got a new one from the Black Crows. The Dandy Warhols have another one. Amiria Grinnell and Casey Musgraves. Four new records, and we have four reviewers with us. We have Graham Reed, Andra Jenkins, Chris Warren, and Veronica Bell. And we're going to kick things off with Graham Reed, who's been listening to the Black Crows and Happiness Bastards?
Happiness Bastards.
What does it mean?
Yeah, you know, it's bound to attract attention, isn't it? look, the Black Crows. You and I and many people would know the Black Crows because they were exceedingly popular here for a while. But I suspect there's also a lot of people out there who don't know them. So just a very quick recap. I remember seeing them when they came here for the first time in about it was 92. And they played the Super Top at Mount Smart. And I'll remind people what that was. This was a bloody big tent that was put up outside Mount Smart Stadium. It was a temporary measure. But like all those sort of, what do they call them, portable classrooms that turn up at schools, and, oh, it's only a temporary classroom. You know, 20 years later, that classroom is still there, and almost 20 years later, this big tent was still there. But it hosted so many big bands, and I think it held about 13,000, and it was there right into the, you know, big day out era. So anyway, the Black Crows had this big album, debut album, called Shake Your Money Maker. They came here kind of on the back of that, and it really was a big rock album. It had sort of elements of southern rock, you know, a bit of the Allman Brothers, a bit of blues, a lot of like the Faces with Rod Stewart, that sort of swagger, stagger, you know. They were drinkers. The Faces were drinkers. But tellingly, about two songs in, as I recall, at the Black Crows concert, this huge backdrop fell down. There was this massive marijuana leaf on it. And the crowd just went,
I was afraid you were going to say it was a Confederate flag.
Look, you know, I was thinking, did they have a Confederate flag there? But I don't remember that, but I certainly remember the cheer that went up when the marijuana leaf came down. And that was pretty much right. Their audience. So, you know, what they did was there were two brothers in the band. Chris Robinson was the singer and his guitarist brother. And Chris played guitar too, but he was mainly the sort of strutting front man. They were a real sort of long-haired southern rock band, and his brother was the guitarist. And away they went into this really great career. The second album, The Southern Harmony and Musical Companion, is probably a pretty essential album. But then a lot of things happened. A few lineup changes. There was stuff that wasn't quite so good. I think being that stoned didn't quite help their career. The brothers fell out with arguments and God knows what else. One of them married a famous actress, and that never pans out well in my experience. And so it goes, and so it goes.
Have you married a famous actress?
Sorry?
have you married a famous actress, Greg?
I did once.
Seriously?
There you go.
Didn't work out well.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Graham. Proceed. Ignore me.
I am joking.
Oh.
They were just this really great swaggering rock band. But, of course, being Southern boys, there was also quite a lot of country in what they did. And so, you know, you would have these acoustic guitar songs with slide guitar and that kind of thing. I'd just like to say that they made some really great albums, though. That Southern Harmony was a fantastic album. There was one called War Paint in 2008, which was a kind of a comeback album. And one that I particularly like was called Before the Frost, Until the Freeze in 2009. And that was recorded live at Levon Helm's studio. But then they broke up and they staggered on with Chris Robertson. Robinson had his band and his brother had his band. And now the brothers have sort of resolved things and they've all come back together. And what are they doing? pretty much what they were doing right back at the beginning. So I just thought we'd kick it in. The album's called Happiness Bastards, the band's the Black Crowes, and I just sort of kick it in with this. It's a real sort of Stones bluesy type thing. This is called Bleed It Dry.
Excellent.
All this dead blood men and put bruises on my knees, and my throat is sore from always saying please, as I hand out flowers to junkies and the thieves. I know that liars believe what they believe. The time it takes to bleed it dry can lose your brain, the blank of an eye. So you can go hungry, naked and blind, or break these chains and maybe you'll fly.
So yes, there's a lot of interesting stuff on it. There are songs which are just guitar riffs, basically. And there's a couple of, I think, lesser ones on it. There's one called Flesh Wound, which is kind of a honky-tonk come stomp, stomp thing, which doesn't really do it for me. But this one I do like. This is called Follow the Moon, and this is very much in that sort of Rod Stewart Faces era. So this is, same band, Happiness Bastards, the album, Black Crowes, and this is Follow the Moon.
Excellent. Black Crowes on Sound Thinking, and Graham wrapping up talking about their new album, which I'm going to say I love it. I love all this guitar stuff. It does sound exactly like classic Black Crowes and the Faces, which is right up my alley.
Yeah, I mean, this is an album for people who love guitar playing, you know, loud, extravagant guitar playing. And, I mean, that's their forte. So, you know, to expect anything else would be kind of wrong. Although, as I say, that Before the Frost and Until the Freeze, that sort of double collection is worth exploring because there was more of the country roots in it. So the last one I just thought I'd play is this country duet with a Nashville-based singer called Lainey Wilson, who I'll concede straight away I had never heard of. But this is a kind of nice sort of acoustic frame country duet. So this is them again, and this is called Wilted Rose.
Excellent. The Black Crowes, Wilted Rose, Lainey Wilson. So I think the reason the Lainey Wilson made it on there is because the producer is a guy named Jay Joyce, and he's been working with her. And so this guy, Jay Joyce, he's worked with everybody from Orville Peck to Tim Finn, even, I think. He did some stuff with him a long time ago. So I think he's the kind of glue that's holding this album together. Because what I understand is, I read somewhere where they had basically the band just playing live in the studio. Of course, everybody says that, whether it actually happens or not, I don't know. It's a nice thought. And it sounds like a real band here, even though there's really just the two brothers and whoever else they got hanging around at the time, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very much the two brothers and then, as you say, the other people.
I thought the production on the Black Crowes record was superb. The guitars sounded so punchy, and it sounded modern whilst also sounding like a throwback to the late 60s, early 70s. So it had a really nice balance of modern production with kind of old school guitar playing.
All right. Andrew, what did you think of it?
I think it was really kind of clearly Southern rock blues. It was, pretty full on for our I did think Wilted Rose was a standout track. And, you know, I was quite interested in some of the lyrics there. You know, they gathered all the suspects, but there's one they missed, that kind of thing. I think the one I particularly liked was Cross Your Fingers. It was a bit funkier. And I think that, you know, I kind of like a bit of funk with heavy guitar. You know, I mean, guitar-heavy bands rather than heavy right. guitar. I had a look at the lineup. Sven Pippian was the only other person that was doing the recording. There was a couple of others named, but they were touring only.
Right. Yeah, and Sven, he's the bass player who's been around for a little while, but I don't even know if he's actually on the record or not. And there's a drummer called Cully Symington, I think, who's with a name like that, that's probably why they don't put him on the...
Yeah, and there was Nico Bericiatua was, again, yeah. touring only. So Cully and Nico were touring only. They weren't part of the recordings. But, yeah, I mean, it was a big Dunn's Southern Block Blues album, you know? Like, it was really, you know, like, they really stuck to the genre.
Absolutely. Right up there with Molly Hatchet.
Oh, no, come on.
That's Veronica, have you ever heard of these guys? You're the youngster of the bunch here.
Look, honestly, no, and work's been crazy, so I haven't had a chance to listen to the whole album, except I do think Wilted Rose is an absolute slay. I loved it so much. However, I'll tell you what, I adore 60s and 70s rock. Thank you, Dad. And I love weed, so I'm going to listen to this album in full.
That's you all set, isn't it? Very good. Fantastic. All right. So a thumbs up for that, it sounds like. I enjoyed it immensely, but there you go. So in a similar vein, we have, who is it? The Dandy Warhols. I don't know. Well, not really. They're from the similar time period, right? They started in the same time. They have a new album out called Rockmaker, and I think this is like their heavy metal album because they've got Slash on a track. So, Andra, what do you got for us? You've listened to the whole thing.
Yeah, certainly a lot heavier sound than you'd be used to from Dandy Warhols. Even the name sort of doesn't really scream heavy metal. It didn't surprise me that there was a British DJ and producer involved, Keith Tenniswood. He's done some primal scream and things. Overall, I found the album was pretty chill for a heavy rock album. Like, it was a lot of slower-paced, laid-back songs that almost had shades of, like, it sounded like Britpop at times, which is, you know, why I wasn't surprised there was a Brit involved in the mix, mastered. And there was kind of experimental electronica sounds that sometimes featured on earlier albums, and really fuzzy vocals that reminded me of the Butthole Surfers, sort of peak Pepper, but also Pixies stuff, that fuzzy vocal stuff that... Black Francis does, and Frank Black had been involved with several of the songs on it. In fact, they sort of pulled everyone out for it. The bio said it's got elements of punk, but I can't hear that myself. Like, I listened a few times and felt like they're kind of overusing punk to define a lot of modern albums now. And I'd sort of buy post-punk, but there's no raw energy. It's not fast-paced. It's not necessarily aggressive, so I'm not sure what they're hanging that on. There's a lot of spoken word. There's a it kind of strongly links to the lo-fi sounds, like the buzzing distortion on staticky guitar that always kind of sounds a bit experimental, and there's some fuzzy vocals. But they've convinced some great people to appear on it. Like, they've got Black Francis, as I said, in about three tracks, Slash is in there, Debbie Harry. Like, they've clearly got some iconic rock clout.
All right. So do we have a track you want to feature first?
Yeah, I would say Summer of Hate.
Oh, yeah. It's up the front of the album. It kind of defines the vibe, I think. So.
Yeah, it's the second one. It's just faster. I like the faster pace. All right, let's give it a try.
Thank you. that's Summer of Hate, the Dandy Warhols. We're checking out their new album. This one, they're rock masters. Are they masters of rock, Andra?
Yeah, they know what they're doing, for sure. They've been doing it for a while. I first listened to it on my phone, and so it's one of the things, if I'm recording music, I always make sure the first thing I do is listen to it on a pretty shitty sound system.
Right. Like, well, back in the 60s, they used to go around and play it under transistor radio in the car.
Yeah, yeah, just to see, you know, because there's going to be so many people, that's how they receive it. They've just got Spotify on their phone and they're going to receive it that way. And because of all the distortion and the static and the fuzzy guitar and things, it just compressed a lot of the sound and a lot of it was lost. So I listened again on better speakers, and the definition, you know, I mean, obviously higher quality speakers are always going to make the difference, but it was a shame just how much was lost if you're not listening to it on good gear. And I think there's something to be said for, you know, the disappointment of having to listen to a song on good gear and having to have that expense in order to really fully appreciate it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were some elements of funk, and groove. The alcohol, cocaine, marijuana, nicotine has got a bit of funk mixed in it. A lot of electronic and distorted effects. Root of All Evil particularly was got groove. In fact, I think that's the next one I'd play.
Okay, Root of All. Are there some horns in there, I think, aren't there?
I love the horns. I love the horns on Root of All Evil.
All right, let's see if we can hear them.
It's got the wordplay that they're famous for. There's kind of this, you know, utilizing this tongue-in-cheek wordplay, kind of a sneer in the lyrics, and an almost bored, bitchy, shady style going on. It's kind of things that say more grateful than the dead, or, I mean, the title Danzig with myself is, you know, they're making a play on the fact that it sounds a bit Danzig-y but slowed down, but also that Billy Idol dancing with myself. They're kind of, it's still got a sense of humour, which I like. But there's a few lines there that make me wonder if that, you know, like, because I was trying to discern the message, and there was something that said, I don't think that I have any answers. I don't think that I have any questions. And exactly what the truth is anyone's best guess then. So there's kind of this apathy. And as a Gen Xer, I get that. You know, we feel neither highs nor lows, my generation. So it's like this lo-fi music in a stupor. You know, it's rock and roll. It's got electronica, spoken word, experimental. It's somewhat new wave. It's got a whole lot of stuff in there, but there's this apathy.
Yeah, I thought Deborah Harry was wasted. I could barely hear her, and they just put tons of reverb on her. She could have been anybody.
I've seen a lot on doing some, like, watch the live performances. And she's still got the chops. It's just she's possibly not got the energy anymore. I mean, who isn't a bit tired these days?
I blame the production, not Debbie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that they got her in the first place kind of amazed me, to be honest, because I'm sure she doesn't have to. But, it's worth listening to. But if you're expecting earlier Dandy Warhols, you know, this is not if you're the last junkie on earth, you know,
it's not the same fun band that you're expecting.
I
give them credit for trying to do something different, but you got to do it right or better or interesting, at least, I think.
You know, it's atmospheric, but it feels a little lost in the background sometimes. You know, it's like you're listening to this great rock album, but you're super high and it's just kind of washing over you, you know? They've managed to achieve heavy but gentle. I don't understand.
Yep. Graham, would you have a thought?
I heard Iggy Pop. I heard Iggy Pop. You know, that sort of, you know, Iggy Pop is on board, chairman of the board. You know, I really, really heard that in Summer of Hate, Cocaine, Marijuana, Nicotine, that one. And there was another one too. I think I'll Never Stop Loving You. again in that one with, you know, that's the one with Debbie Harry. I just heard that sort of, you know, that sort of spoken word, you know, baritone, but I'm probably pretty bored by it all. I just heard that in a few places all the way through. And I thought Teutonic Wine was interesting. It sort of reminded me a bit of Beck's Loser, but, you know, sort of ground up and thrown back at you. I didn't mind this album at all, and because I'm aware that every time you come to the Dandy Warhols, they're going to be a different bloody Dandy Warhols. You know, they've been alt pop or rock or whatever, and they did, Christ, I mean, they worked with Nick Rhodes, you know, and so did synth pop and psychedelic rock, so... You know, you come at it thinking, well, which Dandy Warhols are we going to get? And so when they play the Power Station April 22nd, it'll be interesting to go along and see what they managed to do with this album live.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it struck me as a very, you know, it was uneven. Yep. Interesting, but not so interesting that you thought, well, I'm really going to hang you on every word here. But I did like some of the tracks, but I just couldn't get away from Iggy.
That's interesting.
And at least three of them anyway.
Very good. Yeah, I interviewed Courtney Taylor a couple of weeks ago, and I think he was more interesting to talk to than to listen to the record. And they were in the process of rehearsing for this tour when they're going to be here, and trying to figure out what songs we're going to fit in. But my feeling is that once they're done with this tour, there probably won't be any of those songs will stay in their set list after this round. So
no, I wouldn't hear anything think so. No. Yeah, isn't it interesting? Eh? You know, like the most interesting thing some musicians do is the interview.
Hey, Veronica, what do you think?
So I wrote... Why does this remind me of the Rocky Horror Picture Show for some reason? It's something my dad would put on and say is heavy metal, but honestly, it's giving like a 60s pop rock opera in a way. Very cool. The delivery sounds bored, but I think that's been done on purpose. I have to be honest, I do love this sort of music. And here's a shocking fact about me. I love Meatloaf, and this sort of kind of gives me that vibe of Meatloaf and Depeche Mode took a bunch of psychedelics and had a baby, but like a baby was still high. I reckon it would sound like this. So I rated it. I think it was cool.
There
like,
you go.
Production aside, who cares? Like I think the whole point of it is just be like, man, I don't give a damn. Like, I'm famous. I can write whatever I want and you're going to like it because you're a fan. It's cool. I rate the belief in yourself, and I didn't know who these people were until like a week ago, so again I have a lot to learn here, but I don't know, I think it was cool.
Anytime Mr. Loaf comes to mind, it's always a good thing, I reckon.
No, just have a look at earlier Dandy Warhols, because Not a Feel of the Last Junkie on Earth is one of the greats. I think it's fantastic, you know, and the Bohemian too, it's fucking great.
Yep. Chris, do you have a thought?
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like I have to fill in two decades of Dandy Warhols now, because I stopped listening to them, I think, on Welcome to the Monkey House, and I saw them at a early afternoon, big day out festival, and they were so high. I just
that was one of the worst performances ever at a big day out.
He couldn't find his effect pedals. It was like he was stomping around the stage in the dark, and it was humorous, but I liked the records then, and I'm interested to see how they got to the sound that they're at now. The sound of this new record is so complex and busy. I didn't always like it, yet it always held my attention. There was a lot going on. And the humor in there was cool. Like, the singer is like humorously neurotic. You know, I can leave you, but I can't leave me, thinking this shit that isn't healthy. Like, I like his what's the word, stream of consciousness kind of lyrics. So I was a fan.
Yeah.
Though I will say it was a disorienting listen, because the stream that we have is not the correct track order. I went and looked at the vinyl, and all different. So that kind of hurts my brain to think about now. So I thought,
that happened.
Yeah, the first two tracks were beautifully sequenced in the version we had, I thought.
Oh boy,
that's really interesting, because I did think, there was some points where I was like, why did they put it in that order. I'm surprised they've got the title track over here. You know, there was a few, a few things I was like, what? I probably would have put this first, or I would have put this third, and probably they did.
Sequencing is important.
Now I'm going to have to go back and listen to it again. All right. Very good. Dandy Warhol's kind of a come see, come saw kind of thing. Some good, some bad. Yeah. All right.
I like what you said, Veronica, you know, about the sort of theatricality. I'm writing about this, and I've sort of said that that song, I Will Never Stop Loving You, it's like that he provides this baritone voice and she provides the ethereal voice, and I've said it's like she's beauty to his beast.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, a gothic rock opera is awaits this song. And it did have that drama and melodrama about it, I thought.
Very good. All right. So, Chris, you have our Kiwi artist of the week, Emiria Grenell. See, I'm terrible.
I've been pronouncing Grenell. It Emiria Grenell. So, I hope
that sounds
I've got
probably
that
more right.
right
than me, definitely.
And I love this record. The album is called The Winter Light, it's her third studio album. And Emiria is from Christchurch, but as I understand, she lives in Wellington. And thematically, like this is a folky record, so there is a lot of emphasis on the words, and there's themes of contemplation, reflection on herself, on parenthood, and it's often set in like natural environments. So lots of references to night skies, to birds, to rain, to forests. So I would say is a track that represents the themes of this album. I'm going to say play the song Susie Blue.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's Sunday and the rain is falling, heavy drops hitting the ground outside. And here I will hide. Promised a day together, simple adventures, walking in the wilderness. It's you that I miss. Susie Blue, why don't you come home soon? We'll go to the sea, just you and me. You stay for a while.
All right, that's Susie Blue from Emiria Grenell. I'm getting there. And Chris has been listening to it all week. So what else you got for us?
Yeah, I really have. I've listened to it several times and gone back to it each time, discovering a little bit more. So some of the songs are like fingerpicked and quite dense sort of folk music. And other songs are have a little bit more space in them, and they're kind of a little bit more country. There's a bit more of a you know, country bass lines and drumming. The accompaniment on the album is superb, really smooth drums and bass, flourishes of slide guitar, little bluesy clean guitar licks, but they never kind of overpower the singer-songwriter focus. So when she's kind of leaning into the country, darker country side of things, she reminds me a lot of Reb Fountain. So there's songs in here that I'm like, actually, if you had Dave Kahn in your band as well, that would be a perfect fit. Right. So fans of Marlon Williams, Reb Fountain, this will be right up your alley. It's not quite as dramatic and dark as Reb or Marlon can sometimes be. It's a little bit more contemplative, and a very sort of feminine record, I want to say. So the song that I loved and have been going back to all week is a track called When They Roam. It's track number 4, and lyrically it's I get the sense it's very autobiographical. She's talking about growing up with 3 older brothers and trying to follow in a certain path set by her parents. And then there's a lyric in there around calling to our children with our hopes. Will they stay with us or jump to a brighter boat? So at what point do you kind of diverge from your upbringings? Do you continue tradition or do you kind of forge your own path? And it ends with this really beautiful melodic crescendo where she's basically just wishing for her daughter, whatever she does, wherever she roams, just to be safe. So Marty, I'll get you to play, if possible, the kind of the last minute of that track, because that's my favorite point on the whole record.
All right, here it comes.
When they roam.
Standing here alone inside our home. Just be safe, just be safe, just be safe, just be safe, just be safe when you roam. Just be safe, just be safe, just be safe, just be safe, just be safe when you roam. Will they win?
Yeah, the whole album feels very cohesive. It's nicely produced. Her vocals remind me a little bit of Joni Mitchell at times as well. It's got that kind of vibrato in her singing when she leans into her folkier elements. So I'm absolutely going to make a point to check her out live. I know that she's touring in May, so I'll be along to that as well. Very excited about her.
Right, right. I think production is what makes this successful record, because otherwise it felt to me like the kind of album that could just wash over you, wash by, and it won't distract you, but it won't stick with you. But there's some beautiful, like there's a trumpet, a bit in one song called Romeo that it was just like, oh, I love that trumpet. And the strings are beautiful. There's some Holly Aerosmith sings some background vocals on a couple of tracks, and I think that's what takes it up to the next level. So just my two cents there. Veronica, did you have any thoughts about it?
I did. It really kind of reminded me, see, the way I describe music is a little bit woohoo, but that's hello. It reminds me, like, is she a fairy? Do you know what I mean? Like, is she in a forest? Is she dancing around with no shoes on? Has she got a sparkly ripped dress? Like, what I really liked, I think what everybody's touched on, is the production. I'm fairly confident, I could be wrong, I'm fairly confident that there is a bit of Foley in there and that she actually went outside and recorded different stuff outside. I could be wrong.
Oh, but, yeah, because like on Burnt Coffee on the last track, there's like Birdsong and...
Yeah.
Might have been some chickens at the end. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's really cool. I think that really adds to the, you know, stamp that this is from Aotearoa, New Zealand, like these very specific sounds that you cannot find anywhere else. I'm sad that I didn't know her until now. I mean, I think her songwriting is brilliant. I think it's one of those albums where you just sort of like get lost in your thoughts in a way. And I think the music in itself, it's kind of sparse in the soundscape, but I think, as somebody pointed out, that it really is to showcase the lyricism. I definitely got Reb Fountain as well. I wrote that down. I wrote down early Big Runga. So yeah.
All right.
A plus.
So
Good job.
She won a Tui back on her first album, right? Is that right, Graham?
Yes, she did, and she established herself very, very quickly. I heard her very much in the same lineage as Veronica's mentioned. You know, there is this lineage of women singer-songwriters, and again, you know, like this idea of naturalistic imagery is very, very common. And so, you know, for all those reasons, I think it would have immediate appeal. But to me, it also felt very intimate.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's sort of the great outdoors is being evoked, it does feel like it's something very intimate from a, you know, if not a folk club, certainly she's sitting in your living room and, you know, getting away with playing these songs and you're going, yep, I'm listening, I'm hanging on every single
word. Speaking of lineage, so her dad was a singer, pop star of some note here in New Zealand, right? Back before my time.
Well, no, he was a very well known country singer. His name is John Hore, H-O-R-E, and was obliged to change his name when he tried to went to the States because John Hore is not going to work.
Yikes.
Either word there. It's not just whore is the problem, John but too. A yeah, John.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
So, both were, it was a double jeopardy. So his name is John Grinnell. And I would think it might be the very late 80s, possibly early 90s. He had this massive and unexpected hit. He sang Welcome to My World, sort of big sort of, country style ballad. But again, it was an intimate song, and it was on an advertisement. And it just captured people's imagination. And so he'd already, my recollection is he'd already done an excellent album called Silver, which went past just about everybody because, he's a country musician. Who cares, But Silver was a really terrific album, and I believe they did a repressing of it and added Welcome to My World because that was the song that everybody knew. And so John Hoare had a very substantial career in country music here. Yeah, he had a dark brown country voice and not stentorian, but big enough. He was quite a big deal here for quite a long time.
Andra, do you have anything to say about this?
Yeah, I mean, I like the strings. It almost sounded to me like vintage doo-wop in some stages.
Ooh, okay.
Huh. There was kind of like that quality to it. It's a slow folk country. You can hear the sweet, clear lyrics, and I think the vocals are really kind of highlighted. It's everything else is centering around the vocals. I did find that one song almost bled into another. It was sort of hard to differentiate. There weren't a lot of transitions in each song. As a whole album, I just want something to break it up.
Right.
That's fair.
Alrighty.
Okay. That was the density I talked about, and because I had that first impression as well, and the space came with repeated listens, but some of the songs were hard to kind of, I was intrigued by the density. It made me want to meet it on its own terms.
Alrighty. Okay. We got one more album to deal with. It's Casey Musgraves. It's called Deeper Well, and Veronica has been listening to that little rascal. What do you think?
I had to put my glasses on because I'm blind. Yeah. So, listen, I already quite like Casey Musgraves. I think her sound, although it's not necessarily like super unique, it's very fresh. It's very pleasant to listen to, and I find her lyricism absolutely impeccable. So I'll start off by talking a little bit about the album itself. So it was actually co-produced and co-written by Casey herself with Daniel Tashian and Ian Fitchuk? I think that's how you pronounce his name. And interestingly, I wrote Phoebe Bridgers, I wrote Taylor Swift Folklore Evermore, I wrote early Miley Cyrus, and then when I looked back and saw where the record was actually recorded, it was recorded at Electric Lady Studios in New York City, which it just makes so much more sense to me. It's really, this studio, for some reason, it has its like essence, and I can almost tell now when an album has been produced there. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's like the country-ish influence, kind of try to go pop sort of thing. I'm not really too sure, but what I've written here is I'm going to change that. So I want to start off the entire sort of my segment of the podcast with the song called Deeper Well. I think it really is a focus track on this particular album.
My Saturn has returned. When I turned 27, everything started to change. Took a long time, but I learned there's two kinds of people. One is a giver, the one's always trying to take all they can take. So I'm saying goodbye to the people that I feel around.
That's Deeper Well from Kacey Musgraves. Her new album is called Deeper Well. Veronica's been listening to it. And I think, Veronica, like you said, that song, Deeper Well, it has a line about my Saturn has returned. And I think something...
You stole my line.
I'm getting you. I'm just walking you into it. And I have no idea what it means, but I have a feeling you do.
Oh, yes. You're so right. I mean, look... basically, you know, when your Saturn returns, it's a really big deal in your astrological chart, and it basically means like a rebirth of you as a person. And so, it happens between the ages of, you know, 27 to 30, 31. So, you know, when she says my Saturn has returned, and when I turned 27, everything started to change. It took a long time, but I learned there's two types of people. One is a giver, one's always trying to take. So I'm saying goodbye to the people that are, you know, good at wasting my time. I was just like, oh, that is so amazing. Truly, it's like she's talking about, you know, this deeper well, and it could be a multitude of things. It could be like her referencing she just wants to jump into the abyss, or it could be she's reaching deeper into her cup to fulfill herself and her own happiness and find her own sense of belonging. The second track. The thing about this album, though, right, is although the lyrics were absolutely phenomenal, 10 out of 10, there is something, and I wrote an essay about this in university, okay, and my lecturer at the time was like, if you can prove me wrong, I'll give you an A. I got an A+. So I was trying to argue against the authenticity of pop music, because this is essentially, despite being country, this is got a lot of pop elements in there, particularly within the delivery, the melodies as well. But pop is the most regurgitated genre there is no, I truly believe that there is no true authenticity when it comes to melodies, right? You've only got what, so many keys, so many scales, so many combinations of melodic passages that work in the sense of being catchy and hooky. Trust me, I've done a degree on this. It's a fact. However, the way in which she does make this unique is with her lyricism and with her really unique delivery. Like, I found her voice... this is the reason why I said so many people, because she really does sing in her own style, which kind of is that key identifier of her songs. I think a really good song to listen to next would be Moving Out.
We're moving out. Remember I still wore that dress at Christmas that we all got sick and partied anyway. I had a breakup and then I bought it. You always said it might be haunted, and I think you're right. A couple of real big fights that we had. I cried, but it was hard to stay mad. We had good times, can't deny it. And even though I feel excited, I'm kind of sad to leave it now that autumn's moving in. We're moving out.
Man, this song had me in a puddle of tears. Truly, I was at work listening to this album, and today I was like, I'm going to put on some eyeliner. That was a mistake. You know, when she sings, autumn is moving in and we're moving out. Like, you know, what does that tell you? That tells you that the seasons are already changing within your safe space, within your home, whilst you're, you know, going through this moving out period. And I genuinely thought that this was about a breakup. I mean, I'm sure that you could apply it to your own experiences and your own life. And that's, I think, what I quite like about Kacey's lyrics is they are a little bit more obvious. Like, there isn't a you've got your metaphors, absolutely, but they're obvious. So you're like, okay, yeah, I do feel like that. And it kind of, she has a way of reaching into your memory and like picking out a little memory that, you know, you may have just stowed away for a decade or 10, and you're suddenly thinking about it. So I said, I find it funny how their softer deliveries of artists can leave me more mesmerized than hugely acrobatic vocals. Of course, both are impressive in their own right, but I feel like having the ability to connect with that feeling and that feeling in your throat when it's almost like someone genuinely has you in a chokehold, I feel like that's a gift. To have the ability to sing and hear a pin drop, which is kind of how I felt with this album. I mean, the instrumentation was really beautiful. It was actually quite cinematic in the way in which it kind of went through the album itself. I almost felt like, you know, is this album, you know, it's referencing astrology, it's referencing changing of the seasons, it's referencing change. I think change is a huge theme of this particular album. She just beautifully articulates that. I really liked Dinner with Friends as well. I liked that it was a 6/8 kind of waltzy sort of vibe. I found it interesting in the sense that at the start of the song kind of feels like you're in a wintry kind of December type thing. And then because the instrumentation has this incredible cinematic soundscape, it kind of like artistically goes through those different seasons, which I think is a prominent theme, another prominent theme on the album. Best song on the album, in my opinion, which we're going to play right now, Jade Green.
Say a little prayer to drive away the dark, and I'm with you, and you're with me, like the bracelet that you
Jade Green is like the magnum opus of this album, both the way in which the melody works, the way in which her songwriting works, the way in which it feels really Celtic and really builds up this beautiful cinematic storyline represented in the way and the music has its pits and its falls and really does make you feel like you're watching a trailer or a movie for something. Obviously sad, because this is kind of her vibe as well, you know, it's like sad girl folky country pop recorded at Electric Lady Studios. So if you're a fan of Lana, if you're a fan of, you know, Tay Tay, Folklore Evermore, if you like Phoebe Bridges, like this album is for you. So obviously it's for me, but no, I really, really hope, because I mean, look, she's already got Grammys, but I really hope that she gets some Grammy noms with this album, because I think it is probably, in my opinion, her best work.
Oh, yet. Okay. Very good. All right. I thought it was strong, but I didn't think it was that strong. I thought it kind of ran out of gas near the end.
Fair enough. That's fair. But I mean, the melodies were very recycled. Like I did say that, you know what I mean? Like it's classic. It's pop music. Nothing is authentic. Not even people's sense of style. It's all a regurgitation of things that you're seeing and consuming every single day.
Right.
Nothing is authentic.
And it's definitely not a country record. Like there's a track called Sway with all these multi-layered harmonies and stuff. It's very kind of Baroque kind of, you know, I don't know.
But her delivery is so country though. Like,
well, she's
and
from
I
Texas,
think,
you know.
Of course, of course. She's never going to get rid of that
right.
sort of, maybe this album was more like country girl. I've moved to the city. I'm in New York. Like it's romantic and it's like heartbreaking and it's all, you know, all these things, I think.
Yeah. Chris, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, I will say that the strength of the songs on this record that jumped out to me, and I had never heard her before this morning, and I listened to her this morning and I literally ordered the vinyl from JB Hi-Fi. You get a signed little art card too, which sweetened the deal. Thank you, JB Hi-Fi. And yeah, I was psyched about it. It reminded me of Phoebe Bridges, and Phoebe Bridges reminds me heavily of Elliot Smith. So that highly melodic but like really sad vocal melody that somehow moves really quickly and has its own kind of bounce to it. I wrote down that it feels like a really modern take on like the indie country genre. And mm-hmm. I loved what you said, Veronica, about how specific her lyrics are. They don't, you know, there's not a lot of big metaphors that take a long time to digest. You know, you get a sense very quickly of what she's talking about, and it pulls on your own experiences. You've like, I've been in that change moment. You know, the track Deeper Well, she's talking about kind of outgrowing old coping mechanisms. You know, she doesn't need to wake up and get high every day. Yeah, she wants to take better care of herself and think more carefully about whose energy she wants to be around, which people serve her, which people don't. And those are all just really relatable, introspective lyrics. So, yep, two thumbs up for me on this one.
I'm so glad that Veronica got this to review and not me. I really am, because this is not my genre. This is so not my genre. Fair. I've got billed as country, but feels more like straightforward pop. Like it really felt like pop. I like the layered vocals. There was kind of almost shades of Eliza McLam with that singer-songwriter talking about themes in a pretty saccharine voice, melodic harmonic. I thought Cardinal was almost reminiscent of California Dreaming, the Mamas and the Papas.
That's what it is. My gosh. Okay, I wrote down in here, literally in my notes, I said Cardinal. I love the ambiguity of the opening track, but I swear that this song sounds like something else and it's driving me mad. I can't remember what it is. I hope that somebody else can pick it out for me.
Thanks, Andrew.
No worries. But, I mean, overall, you're going to hate me, but I just thought it's a bit basic white girl, you know? There's not a lot going on.
Well, it is, though.
She's moved out. She's gone on a walk. She's seen a bird. You know,
like, I mean, it is though, but that in itself is kind of like a niche genre. It's become like this weird niche genre in itself.
I know. I can see that that's coming up, and like I say, I'm way elderly when it comes to stuff like this. So this is definitely stuff that other people are listening to, not because I'm just like, oh, someone gave her a bracelet. Cool.
She attached a lot of meaning to that bracelet and to that bird. So
that's true. It's true.
Like I said, it's so straightforward. I did think that Architect had more metaphor and more kind of meat on it. There was something more abstract about it. But to me, it felt a little self-absorbed, like that. It's not even confessional style. It was almost like observational rather than confessional. And it just felt a little self-absorbed. I was kind of like, to be fair, I've been absolutely thrashing Rage Against the Machine, and you can't.
That's fair.
In terms of packing meaning in, Zach De La Rocha just gets it all in there, and he absolutely means every minute of it. So I think a few albums are kind of, I'm finding, lacking just because of that comparison. But
very, very cool.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think, Graham?
Well, look, this is all I'm going to say, because I, you know, everybody has said quite complex and interesting things about it. I'll just say this: it is a pop album. There's no doubt about that. And I have a lot of time for pop music. I just think, you know, you use the word, Veronica, authentic. Is that right? Was that that you say it's not authentic?
I'm saying that pop music is not authentic. Yes. Mm. As a person who writes pop music,
it's derivative.
I would just,
yes.
Well, yes,
everything is influenced by everything else.
I would dispute the use of authentic. I think it can be absolutely authentic, but it can certainly be derivative, and it can certainly, you know, referencing everything else. So authentic is not a word I'd use about it, because there's a lot of music is not authentic because it's just using other tropes, and, you know, whatever. Just about this album. First of all, I think it's going to be enormously popular, and I give this as the reason. My wife works in a bookshop, and as you can guess, they have a lot of very different people going. It's a special, you know, it's a good bookshop. It's the best one in Auckland, so you can guess which one it is. And they have people of all persuasions going through that shop, and the staff there is a huge, you know, very wide demographic. they have been playing Casey Musgrove's, I think it was the last album, and everybody likes it.
Mm.
Nobody comes up to turn right. that racket off. And that, you know, and that's from people who are in their very early 20s to people who are in their 60s. Mm. So, you know, I think she has that kind of very broad appeal. I'm going to be honest, I doubt that I would play it more than once.
That's so fair.
You know, my interests take me somewhere else. So I get it, but it's not going to be big on my radar.
Graham, you're so unsuspecting. I had no idea that you were such a pop fan. Who's your favorite pop star?
Oh, you mean that kind
yeah.
of pop?
Yeah.
I mean, I like Taylor Swift. I think Taylor Swift
We're
is
best
a great
friends.
Talent. Yeah.
We're best friends.
Everybody loves
She's an enormous yeah. talent. Yeah. And so, you know, I just find it surprising that anybody thinks otherwise, actually.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
Which brings us rather neatly, Marty, I think, to...
Yes.
Pink.
Oh, my God. And I know Veronica went, right? Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
I brought my daughter with me, who's in her 30s, and she's sung every song all the way through from beginning to end, and I had a great time as well. Which night did you go to, Veronica, the first or second here?
The second night.
Second. I went to the first, all right. Yep. Mm. Yep. So what's your take on it?
I think anybody who – okay, so firstly, I she played all her pop hits, but I was surprised because I felt like the show – despite its marketing, seemed like a bit of a slower pace than I had anticipated.
Okay.
That's not a bad thing, though. What I'm saying is, like, if you can sing, if you can sing full stop and hang upside down on a rope and sing in tune with no auto tune, with no backing track, with hardly any backing vocals, that's crazy.
And
that's
he didn't
like,
just hang once upside down. I mean, it was throughout... It was an almost 2-hour show, and
yeah.
it would be like, "Oh, there she goes again."
it's crazy. And a friend of mine, her name is Abby Nunson. She's also an artist, Missy. She slays. We were talking about her, the way in which her diaphragm must have somehow adapted, and the way in which her abs sit that you can obviously see because she's fit.
Yeah.
You know how different they look. And I'm not trying to like comment and be like disrespectful. I find it interesting from an anatomy perspective of how different it looks to, you know, somebody who doesn't fly around upside down. She's got the muscle. She looked amazing. She sounded incredible. I mean, Pink can do no wrong in my opinion. She's such a badass. It was such a good concert. If you didn't go, I'm sorry, you actually missed out.
That was excellent. So I'm curious as to what people think, because there's some discussion. Speaking of Taylor Swift, the reason Taylor Swift never came here is because the stadium had X amount of allowable concerts to have, and I think Pink filled up the bill, so therefore there was no Taylor, and of course there was a lot of money that was sent offshore because of that. Does that make any sense to you guys? What do you think the solution is to that one?
Taylor should have played Mount Smart or Eden Park, whichever one Pink didn't.
She was at Eden Park, yeah.
I to be honest, I agree. I mean, I don't know, her stage is it's like 90 meters or something. It's like humongous. So I don't know if we have the infrastructure. But all I will say is, if I was Auckland City Council and Taylor Swift said, "Hi, I want to play in your country," I would go to my lawyers immediately and change the resource consent for this particular year only. Are you kidding me? Mm. It's a show for that is going to make history, regardless whether you like it or not, you know, like her or not. So I'm always Team Taylor.
And especially a show like that, and like the Pink show, it wasn't a, like, you can make an argument at Guns N' Roses, say, when they played, it was a hard rock, you know, a kind of narrow cast, but that show was for everybody. There were kids, there were old people there. There was everybody was at the show. It's a community event. It's not a concert.
Yeah, needed multiple nights.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on which Guns N' Roses show you were talking about, because one of them, they collapsed the power station and things went very badly wrong.
Did anything catch on fire?
No, people got hurt, though.
Really?
Yeah, they were crushed. There were people crushed.
No, I'm talking about the one that they played at Mount Smart last year.
Oh, my god!
No, not that one. Early days, they played the power station and people got crushed.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. That's right. Not good. I hope they're all pretty okay. Sure.
I have something to say because we live about 100 meters away from Eden Park. You know, there's, if anybody knows the area, Papa's Pizza, which is just reopened, is on the corner of our street. So we can walk down to Eden Park and it takes us, I don't know, if I said 5 minutes, that's probably a minute too long. It's that close. We didn't go to the show. We can't afford to go to these shows, to be perfectly honest. I would love to see, you know, the Cirque du Soleil Pink show, because that's, you know, how I thought of it. You know, she's flying through the air and that's Cirque du Soleil, but with better songs, obviously. But, you know, we go for a wander and we went down the road and caught the vibe. And it was, you know, it's a great vibe. I mean, it's a big event. You know, it's a sense of occasion. It's not just a pop concert. There is a sense of occasion about it. But this is interesting because, you know, Guns N' Roses played down there. We had to go and stand by the fence to hear Guns N' Roses. We had to go and stand by the fence to hear Pink, because her stage was at the Sandringham Road.
Yeah, it was the other way around.
Yeah. It was facing the other direction. But the one that we heard with absolute clarity from, you know, our living room was that Bugger Edge. That was so loud. But he had the speakers, you know, speakers in the round.
I'm sorry for you.
But here's the thing. You know, I see on Facebook people say, all those buggers around bloody, you know, Eden Park complaining about concerts. That's not true. We don't complain about concerts. There was a very small cabal of people who styled themselves as the Residents Association or whatever. They complained. The rest of us around here, we don't mind it at all. And so if these guys, and I've already filled out the survey, if these guys come back and say, should we have more than six concerts a year? I tick the box, absolutely you should. Because, you know, first of all, that place costs ratepayers money, and any money that goes back into it probably means that maybe our rates won't go up quite so high. But, you know, it's, and then people say, oh, you know, it's a, you know, we need a proper venue, not one that's, you know, right in the suburbs. Look, anybody who watches British football on television, you know, and they pan back from the stadium where the football's being played, people are living in their houses all right around it, you know, same in the States, you know. I mean, I've been to a few in the States, which, you know, admittedly are outside the city, but a lot of them are right there in the centre. And I just want to make this point too. People talk about a waterfront stadium, you know, and there's all this bullshit about that and how great that's going to be and whatever. What people tend to forget is that when people go to concerts or, you know, sporting events, they dribble in, don't they? You know, for an hour and a half, 2 hours before, but they all leave at the same time. That's the problem, because what happened here was, you know, there was a problem with people getting onto trains or whatever. Can you imagine if you had a stadium out on a pier, suddenly you're going to have 40,000, 45,000 people all coming out and not going anywhere other than the one direction? That would just be gridlock. Yep, yep. So, you know, I think that when we're thinking about these stadiums, you know, we just got to think a little more laterally how they actually work. Eden Park works. Because when people go out, they can go out in all these different exits and go in different directions. Yes, they need to get something done better with the trains, but that happens. That will happen. Yep. So that's, you know, for what it's worth, that's, you know, that's what I have to say.
All right. Any other thoughts that are on anybody's minds here before we wrap things up?
I just have one thought.
Okay.
And I think it applies to Tay-Tay, but more so to Pink, is I struggle with the spectacle of the gig. Like, the only gig that I've ever walked out of before it ended was U2 at Mount Smart. And they had this spider stage, huge screens, like, you know, charitable messages. And like, you know, it was all of the, and all the time, the band members were 100 meters apart from each other. And because there's so much choreography and like theatrics or explosions, whatever it is, if the spontaneity of the music disappears. Right. And so I've always struggled with these big spectacle shows because I feel like I'm watching a film rather than music. So it kind of turned me off from being open.
I know what you're saying, and I'll give Pink credit because I felt like her in-between comments were, maybe they were scripted, but they felt spontaneous. Like she, you know, she was calling it, there was an 11-week-old baby in the crowd somewhere and she was waving to that one. Somebody had their birthday and she, you know, I mean, she probably does that at every show, but her, the way that she did it felt like it was happening in her brain right then and there. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. I just thought as she talked, something happened where there was a false beginning. She was sitting with her piano player at one point, a false start, and they started it over again. And she's sitting on top of the piano, and suddenly she starts talking about how her mother used to sing in bars on sitting on top of pianos. You know, now that may be a shtick that she does, but if it is, she pulled it off beautifully. I believed her.
Whenever I've seen interviews of her, she seems guileless. She does. It just seems like someone with no filter. Like she has an authenticity with people, and she's not filtering what she says. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that was absolutely authentic, ironically.
Yeah.
Well, she didn't do it on Saturday.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, she did, you know, talk to the audience and stuff, but she didn't be like, oh, no, can we start again? But she did kick off her shoes at one point, which I loved. I was like, yes, you do not need those heels. It's so unnecessary. Just, like, get lost in it. It was great.
Isn't it amazing how we analyze these the tiniest of gestures?
Yeah.
You know, took their shoes off or whatever, you know? It's interesting to me that she, you know, she gets up and does the high wire and all that kind of thing. That's the fact, isn't it? It is like Cirque du Soleil. But, you know, when Garth Brooks did the same and swung out across the audience, you know, the country singer Garth Brooks, people were just so down.
Yeah, but I'd be worried he fell on me.
Too much theater and, you know, he should be authentic country boy just standing up there in his Stetson and playing guitar. I went to the show when he came. Ooh, he was at the Super Top as well. I thought it was a fantastic show. And I like the fact that he climbed up ladders and swung out over the audience.
Miley Cyrus's ball and chain is iconic now, you know, that image.
There you go.
Exactly.
I love her.
Well, it's even referenced in that goddamn awful J-Lo movie that's out now too.
Is she still relevant?
No. Well, he has not sold copies of that album anyway, about 8,000 in total or something, 10,000 maybe. Right. And she made, you know, she's made an album all about getting back with Ben Affleck.
I mean, Jenny from the Block is now Jenny's Got the Chop, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think she's had that for a little while. But not only is this terrible album, and it really is a terrible album, there's an even worse film.
Tell us how you really feel, Graeme.
Yeah. And not only is there a film, there's a 90-minute documentary about the making of the film and the making of the album.
She's trying to make herself, like, massive.
All right.
She's trying super hard. Well, sorry.
It hasn't worked. Hasn't worked. Feel free to edit my comments out.
No, I'm putting them all in there.
Anyway,
I'm just thinking how I can amplify them.
Put effects on them.
Exactly. It's all the reverb and stuff. All righty. Well, I think we've touched on everything. Now, I always have to think of a song to go out with, and I've had this song in my head by somebody who I'd never heard of until this morning because I heard it on TikTok. It's by somebody called Dasha, D-A-S-H-A. She's a country singer. She's like 23 years old, and she has one of these viral TikTok things going on where everybody's doing this special dance, like a line dance thing. And it's her, and there's another one by Beyonce with a song called Texas Hold'em, which isn't quite as good as this song by Dasha, which is called Austin. I love the lyrics. I now am determined to go on and listen to their whole album and see if she's got anything worth listening to. So thank you all for doing this week. We'll see hopefully all of you again next week on Sound Thinking. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.